Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Claire. It's been great. I have been very, very lucky today. I have two teenage daughters, and my older daughter was on a gap year this year, and she has been in Southeast Asia traveling for the last 4 months. So she came back last night, and I basically spent the day with her today. So it's been amazing to hear about all her adventures and, just see her. I've missed her so much. So I've actually had a really good day, as well as juggling a couple of clients and a few work calls. But yeah, it's been really, really good. So yes.
It does sound like an awesome day. And I'm so sorry, really, but I'm going to have to start that all over again, because all the live comments are coming through. There's loads of live comments, but they can't hear us because, silly me, I've forgotten to turn the microphone on.
Okay,
oh my God. Okay, so we're going to start again, everybody. I've just got a message saying everything's okay now, so I will chop the start of this. So, really sorry. We'll start again. So, welcome everybody to the Wild Ginger Running live broadcast. I'm thrilled here tonight to be with Renee McGregor, who has written More Fuel You and a number of other excellent fuel books related to running and sport. And she's a leading sports dietitian and author, obviously, and a few personal achievements. March 2022, she was British Trail Champion in the short distance in the F45 category. And then, even more amazingly, this summer, she was third lady in the Spine Sprint. She's also done the Manaslu Trail Race, which is 222 kilometres in Nepal, twice. So welcome, Rini. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Claire. I am really good. Today's been a good day. I have done a bit of work today, but I've been mainly catching up with my daughter, who has been travelling for the last 4 months, and I've not seen her, and I've missed her so much. But she's been travelling around Southeast Asia, so it's been so cool hearing about her experiences and her adventures, and just getting to see her again. Today's been a good day. Today has been a good day. Tomorrow's a bit more complicated, but today's been a good day. So.
Yeah, so she's back. She's in the bosom of her family again. Oh, 4 months is a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, we've always had a really good relationship, and I've always encouraged my girls to be independent and go off and follow their dreams and, you know, kind of learn from their mistakes. Very much how I try and live my own life. I've always tried to encourage that from them. And of course, I wanted her to go away and experience the world and see new cultures and really learn from the fact that, you know, life is so much bigger than what we grow up with in our little bubbles around us. And she's done all that. And it's, I can't really put it into words how proud you feel and how amazing it is to watch your child grow literally day by day when they're on, you know, when they're on the road. But as her mother, I've also missed her so much. Aww. And it's been really weird. It's been that kind of like, I really want you to go and enjoy your life and do the things that make you happy. But wow, it feels very strange. And it's the longest time since she was a baby, like ever since I've given birth to her, that yeah. I've not seen her. So yeah, it's been great. And I'm, like I said, it's been so nice to have her back, and she seems happy to be back, which is great. And looking forward to just catching up a bit more with her every day over the next few weeks. So
And maybe she's tried some amazing food while she's been away as well.
Yeah, she has. She was telling me about some of the things she's been trying, and I was like, that sounds interesting. Yeah. She posts quite a lot of pictures on Instagram. So, you know, you could actually comment and go, wow, that looks amazing. And then there were some really like slightly strange things. And I was like, are you sure you should be eating that? it's been good. And like, you know, like she said, food was amazing out there, as you can probably appreciate, and very different to kind of what we get here in the UK. You know, I always say that about Indian food, because obviously growing up with Indian parents and being sort of brought up on Indian food.
Yum.
When we go to like restaurants, it is so westernized. Like the food has become so westernized, just to kind of, I suppose, you know, to kind of match the palates that are around. So it's nice again for her to appreciate what it tastes like, what it feels like to taste those foods in their environment, and the flavors and the kind of, you know, the herbs and the spices that are going to be slightly different to what you can get in the UK. So yeah, it's been fun. I'm looking forward to her. She did a Thai cooking course, so I'm looking forward to her trying that on me at some point.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, it'd be amazing to go to Thailand. My mum was born in Thailand, so it would be amazing to go to Bangkok and just like see where she was born and raised for a few years of her life. That's amazing. I'm glad that she's really into food and that she's fueling properly, because the first topic I wanted to talk to you about that you cover in More Fuel You, which is an amazing book that kind of blasts through many of the myths that we've maybe read about and the fads that come through on like social media about running and sport, and that's REDS. So I was just hoping you could first of all explain what it is for somebody who doesn't know or never heard of the term REDS before, and then just briefly sort of cover why it's important, and why you might not even know that it's affecting you. I thought that was interesting about the book.
Yeah, sure. So REDS is also known, I mean, REDS stands for Relative Energy Deficiency in Sport. And fundamentally, it used to be known as the female athlete triad, which some people might have heard of, which was a situation where we saw in female athletes particularly that when they didn't fuel sufficiently, so when they didn't have enough energy going into their bodies to support their training and their overall health, then often they would find they'd get menstrual disturbances, so their periods would become affected and often stop. And when this went on for longer periods of time, it had a negative impact on their bone health. So hence it was the triad from like the sort of female aspect, the hormones, the low energy availability, and then and the bone stress. Now, as we have progressed through with sports science, and you know, we have like many more athletes available to research with and observe. It was, I think it was like 2014, the IOC committee, they created a consensus document, because what they were noticing is that actually this female athlete triad didn't seem to be just affecting females. It seemed to be affecting both men and women. And it wasn't just affecting menstrual cycles and bone health. It actually affects every single biological process within the body.
Wow.
So fundamentally, what happens with REDS is when you don't fuel appropriately for the amount of work your body needs to do. Now, work being training, but also all movement. So like if you have a really physically active job, that will count as movement. If you, you know, I walk my dogs twice a day as well as do my own training. So that's like a lot of work as well. So there's a lot of energy demand there, but the body doesn't differentiate between training and movement. And I think this is where a lot of people go wrong, because they just don't really count.
Yeah, like if it's not on Strava, then exactly. Nah, it's not, you know, I walked exactly. to the swimming pool and did my session and I walked back. That exactly. doesn't really count.
Yeah. So when there's, so what happens is the body will always prioritize movement in terms of energy. So whatever energy you take into your body, it will use what it needs to use for all the movement and work that your body is doing. Mm-hmm. And once it's done that, whatever is left over is what is left over to then support what we call biological function. So that is our menstrual health or our hormonal health. So men and women hormonal health, our digestive systems, our cardiovascular systems, our brain and our mood, you know, our bone health, all the things that are going on within our body, even like our red blood cell production. So all the things that are going on within our body. Now, if there is not enough energy left over to do this, then the body starts to basically preserve energy. So it goes into what we call compensatory behaviors, and it will start to downregulate our metabolism mm-hmm. and basically one by one shut these biological functions down. Mm-hmm. So a bit like your smartphone when it's on low battery mode and it starts to slow things down. It's exactly like that. Now, there's no like set pattern. Like it's not like it's going to do digestion first and then bone health. It will be varied depending on the individual and the individual's genetics and physiology and training age and background and, you know, how chronically underfueled they are. All those different things are going to pay price to it. So it is a real problem, and there are two types of REDS. There's voluntary REDS, or should we call more intentional REDS, and there's accidental REDS. Now, a lot of people fall into accidental REDS in the sense they just don't appreciate how much fuel they need.
Yeah, and so, I was really interested in that, because I thought, oh no, there's no way that I don't eat enough, because I like stuff my face with whatever I fancy. But then there was that lady who in your case, you have, it's like full of case studies, this book, which yeah. is fantastic. And there was one lady who'd switched like meal, she got like a certain meal and it had switched something, she didn't realise it. And so she yeah. was unintentionally going into REDS. And I just thought that was really good thing to be aware of.
And I think particularly in the day and age we live in, when we are influenced by social media so much, and I think we can start to change our diets because we think something is good for us mm-hmm. but not necessarily appreciate that it might not support our training. So carbohydrate availability is really critical when you are training hard, and this is often the thing that people are not getting quite enough of. And if you chronically underfuel, particularly carbohydrate, then you will potentially find that you may slip into REDS, like I said, accidentally. Now, intentional REDS is much more complicated, and I mean, we could do a whole evening on it, so we're not going to, but I'll just try and kind of condense it. But intentional REDS is much more psychological, in the sense that the individual is consciously making the decision to either restrict their energy intake and or overtrain or remove food groups from their diet. So it's very much associated with disordered eating and, in the worst case, an eating disorder. Now, the difficulty is that obviously when you think about the individuals that take up sport, and particularly, you know, it doesn't have to be like professional, recreational, you know, whatever. When you think about the individuals, generally speaking, we tend to all be a very similar type of personality. You know, we'll be fairly driven, we'll be quite motivated, we'll be quite determined, we probably quite self-critical as well. but also fairly obsessive and compulsive. Like, how many times have you been out with a group of mates and gone, God, we're quite obsessive, aren't we? Like, runners are quite obsessive. Like, it's kind of what we know we are. Now, these are not negative traits. These are just traits that make you more susceptible to developing disordered relationship with food and exercise. And what it is when you have that susceptibility and you put that into a competitive environment, or you put that into that very, you know, that sort of psychosocial space. So we've got societal ideals that are constantly telling us how we should live our lives and what we should look like and how we should eat. And then you have got a fairly challenging culture within sport, in that it is competitive and it's also quite ruthless at times, depending on, you know, which level you're operating in. And so it's this combination of susceptibility, environment, and societal ideals that can then create this perfect storm to allow for dysfunctional eating and dysfunctional training. So that's a lot more complicated. So when you're working with sort of more intentional reds, it's going to take a lot longer to recover from, because you have to help the individual understand their behaviors, understand the purpose of why they're doing what they're doing, and also help them to change those very ingrained behaviors, because it's not supporting them, it's not serving them, and actually it's going to have negative consequences to both their health and their performance. When you've got accidental reds, generally speaking, the individual will probably present with fairly similar symptoms, in that maybe it's a recurrent injury, perhaps they're noticing that there's changes to their menstrual cycle, perhaps they're feeling like they're not adapting to the training, they're putting all this work in and it's not, nothing else is going on for them, but there's no psychological involvement, which makes it a lot more easy to provide an intervention. Because once that person presents to you and you can see there's no kind of absolute desire or compulsion to do what they're doing, you can provide them with the right support and the right advice, and that will be a combination of lots of different things, you know, from restoring energy availability, potentially modifying training for a while, looking at lifestyle, understanding their body composition. Like, it's very complicated, but once you have kind of given them that information, they'll take it away, they'll put that into practice, and within a few months they'll be back in their sport kind of happy and confident and robust. Yeah. But obviously with intentional reds, it is very, very complicated, and it can take years in some cases to recover, and some people don't recover. And I think it's really, you know, it's a much more serious situation, but it is something, sadly, that we have seen a massive, massive rise in our clinic. And, you know, I'd say at the moment, probably 70% of the cases that come to us are intentional reds or an eating disorder within sport, however you want to kind of describe it. It's
there. Yeah. They think they're being healthy. They pretend they're being healthy and it's actually not.
It's actually having severe negative consequences to their health and their performance.
And it's hard because you've got to change their entire belief system, haven't you, before they can then do the thing. So, yeah, it must be a lot harder. But hopefully a lot of the people here will just be doing unintentional reds. And I thought it was really interesting just earlier you said about cutting out certain food groups and things like that, because the next thing that I just wanted to talk to you about was LCHF, which is the low-carb, high-fat. It swept the running world, didn't it, a couple of years ago. And all the ultra runners were like, yeah, I can run for 20 hours on no fuel, I just use the fat that is in my body. And I was like running along going, well, I don't see any fat being used. I need to eat several jelly babies every hour. And so it never really worked for me. But yes, I could see somebody taking on that from social media and accidentally going into reds because they haven't got enough carbs. And then the really funny thing is, I hope you can help me work this out, is I've got loads of friends that are like, oh yeah, I've cut out carbs, I've cut out sugar. And then they eat fruit and vegetables. And I'm like, don't fruit and vegetables have carbs and, like, well, carbs is sugar, but, you know, fruit and veg has carbs in and it has sugar in, so you haven't actually cut out sugar. And then people are like, oh, granola, it's healthy because you use honey, not sugar. And it's like, but that is sugar, isn't it? Like, am I just being dense here? So yeah, I was just wondering if you could clarify the whole LCHF for us, and is it any good for runners?
So to answer your question about fruit and veg first, because it's actually quite important, because it does impact actually recovery from reds as well. So yes, carbs, so fruit and vegetables are carbohydrate, of course they are, but they're predominantly what we call cellulose. They're predominantly cell wall, so they're very high in fiber, and insoluble fiber, so we don't actually digest them, which is the point in why we encourage people to have more fruit and vegetables, because actually for our gut biome we need lots of insoluble fiber, because that provides a really good substrate for the microorganisms within our gut to kind of fuel on, if you want to call it that, and then create all the nutrients that we need for a really healthy gut biome. And we know there's some really good links between gut biome, mental health, gut biome and immune health. So, you know, it is definitely an important aspect. Now, where things can potentially go wrong is when you are doing a lot of training, or when you have maybe you've decided to do low carb, high fat, and you're just getting your carbs from fruit and vegetables, because actually you're not going to get any energy. And this is where you can then potentially fall into this low energy availability, which underpins reds. So fruit and vegetables are critical and important for our diets in the sense that they provide us with obviously insoluble fiber, lots of vitamins and minerals. But we have to be mindful, if we're doing a lot of training, that we don't want to displace actual carbohydrates. So, you know, your rice, your pasta, your potatoes, your bread, your oats. We don't want to displace actual carbohydrate with too much fruit and vegetable, because otherwise you could potentially fall into reds, which is actually what you were saying about one of the case studies. That's exactly kind of what happened to her. She sort of got this meal preparation sort of service and thought she was making all these really, really healthy choices, but actually her training volume also went up significantly at the same time, and she just wasn't getting the carbohydrates she needed in order to support that training, and hence fell into red. So it is definitely something you have to be mindful of. When it comes to low carb, high fat, as you said, Claire, it was very, very on trend a few years ago, but actually I think more and more people are appreciating that it doesn't actually support their performance, and actually often they end up not feeling particularly well. Now, it's not an immediate thing, and this is where I think it's fascinating, because again, when you look at the studies that support low carb, high fat, particularly in endurance sport, they're never any longer than 2 years. And what I find fascinating is that fundamentally a lot of the people that I work with have tried low carb, high fat, and after about 18 months have definitely started to notice the negative impact it can have. But one thing I want to sort of say is that this book is not about it. My book is not about sort of, it's not about trying to criticize the low carb, high fat diet at all. The way in which I have gone about producing the book is to actually give you all the facts and for you to go away and make the right choice for you. So in some situations, it may be the right choice for you. Like, we know there are lots of medical conditions where actually going low carb, high fat can be of an advantage. But yeah, what I always say is, if you choose this path and it is working for you right now, then read the book and just be aware of the potential symptoms or the potential problems that may occur, that actually if you are aware of them and you start to notice they're happening to you, you can act on it and not get stuck in a real hole, which is kind of what I wanted to do. This book was about trying to provide informed information so people can make the right choice for them. So when we talk about low carb, high fat, I think, as you said, the concept is that if you basically are not running at high capacity all the time, then you burn more fat for fuel. And so if you're doing endurance racing, particularly, or endurance sports, then you can start to use, if you're not providing your body with any carbohydrate, your body will burn more fat. So you become much more efficient at using fat for fuel. That was the theory. The problem is, in practice, the body doesn't work like that. So the body is always burning a combination of fat and carbs all the time.
Yay!
And
we're working hard here.
As we go faster, when we're kind of moving harder and pushing harder, or whether we're climbing harder, or whether we're running faster, or whatever it might be, actually our body becomes more and more and more reliant on carbohydrate as that fuel source, because it's the only fuel source that can be delivered to the muscles quick enough in terms of it being broken down into glucose molecules and absorbed by the body, and then provides the energy that we need. So that's a really important thing to understand. And obviously when you're doing endurance racing, especially if you're doing trail running particularly, or mountain running, it's not as straightforward as sticking to the same pace, because you'll be up, down, you know, over rocky bits, running a bit harder downhill, maybe running a bit harder on the ridges. And actually, your pace is constantly changing and your fuel sources need to constantly change at the same time. So if you don't have any carbohydrate, you actually might become limited in what you can do.
Because you need a bit of carbohydrate to actually metabolize the fat anyway. So if you have like literally zero, then what's your body going to do?
Exactly. And the other thing we've learned from the science now is that actually by removing carbohydrate completely from the body, particularly when it comes to runners, actually you become less economic in your ability to run. So you actually use more oxygen per minute of running, which is making you less efficient and less, you know, your running economy is reduced. So there doesn't seem to really be any huge benefit in being low carb, high fat. Like I said, that said, it does depend on what your goals are, what, you know, your background is. We know that females in particular are much more sensitive to low carb, high fat, and it's definitely not something I tend to recommend to females at all at any stage. And again, a lot of women when they're going through menopause will think, oh, I'll cut the carbs out because my body composition is changing. But actually, when you don't have the influence of estrogen, which is what happens in menopause, you're even less able to use fat for fuel appropriately. So you're actually more reliant on carbohydrate as you go through menopause, not the other way around.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose, exactly. Yeah, like with when people say low carb, high fat, then maybe if people were overeating before, like having too much carbs, then for them, relatively, low carbs is quite a good idea. Like there's a guy in the book, I think he was one of the vertebrae people, he said he wanted to lose a load of weight, so he did it for a time and he found it really helpful. And I know my mother-in-law has lost a good stone and a half because she was going to get diabetes, like late onset diabetes, so she did like a low carb thing, and that worked really well for her to lose the weight. But yeah, when we say low, I suppose it depends how low do you go.
That's the problem as well. Even when you look at the studies, there's a real kind of mismatch of what is it, you know, is it lower carb, which I think is what is the case in most perhaps, you know, you don't need a really high carb diet, and perhaps becoming much more moderate carbohydrate is what you should be, you know, trying to work towards. Where it can become problematic is when you're sort of looking at the very ketogenic diet, where literally you're limiting your carbohydrate intake to 50 grams a day. Mm. And that is where I think it can potentially be quite dangerous if you're doing a lot of training and is not necessarily going to be able to support how your body functions, let alone how it can perform. So, but, you know, like I said, I've tried to explain it in the book as much as possible in a kind of really easy palatable manner.
Definitely,
you know, I think I just kind of want people to realize that we're not saying no, we're just saying be mindful and be aware, because also what works for one person is not necessarily going to work for somebody else. And that's a really big kind of theme all the way through the book, is that really what I want you to do is try and find the right approach for you, not actually what your best friend's doing or what Instagram's telling you to do. It's what works for you, and that's kind of very much how I practice my own nutrition. And I'm not saying that I get it right all the time, but I think I've found things that work well for me. But I eat differently to my friends and I eat differently to my partner, and you know, we all are well and healthy and perform well as well.
Yeah, we're all different. I think that really does come through in the book. Like, I was particularly impressed and I liked about the book that you included lots of different people's stories. So, like, you've got lots of people that I know in there, you know, like Damien Hall, who I know you work really closely with, Mimi Anderson as well, and Sabrina Pace Humphreys as well, getting loads of different people in there. One thing I thought was really good was you got somebody called Warren from 33 Fuel, who you challenged a couple of times on social media about the intermittent fasting, which we're not going to go into on this, but it's all in the book, because intermittent fasting is all the rage at the moment, isn't it? So more incentive for people to buy the book and have a look about the science behind it here. And I thought that was great that you included somebody who thinks differently to you, because there's a lot of, it's easy, isn't it? You're the one writing the book, so you can just put in whatever you think. So I thought that was that showed like real maturity and balance and just really the freedom to make up your own mind.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's really important because I think with social media informing so many of us of our everything.
Of our everything. Love that phrase.
Yeah. Everything. I think the problem is if we think about our social media, there is going to be so much bias and confirmation bias because we will all tend to generally follow the same types of people that are doing, have the same interests as us and the same outlook as us, because that's kind of what it's about, isn't it, to a certain degree. But I think the problem with that is then you don't get challenge. And, you know, having worked in the industry for over 20 years, one of the things that's so important, like one of the things I learned going into Rio was that ability to check and challenge, you know, like really check and challenge people, check and challenge the coaches, check and challenge each other, because if you don't, then you might miss something. And, you know, when you're working with a group of individuals, it's important to have individuals that think slightly differently and have slightly different personality types so that you can get the best outcome. And I feel like we're really losing sight of that, because even those individuals that may be a little bit different on Instagram normally, I feel are trying to become more mainstream because it's all about validation. It's all about likes. It's all about, you know, I feel quite, I know that I speak for quite a lot of my friends who are clinicians, and a lot of them have come off social media because they're like, I'm becoming somebody I don't want to become in order to kind of fit in and get my voice heard. And I think one of the things I've always tried to do on social media is actually stay authentic and be very much, this is what I am about. If you don't like it, then don't follow me.
Yes. Like, you know, yeah, and you don't need like a million followers. You need 1,000 good followers.
Social media for me is very much an education platform. It's an opportunity for me to offer good, sound advice based on credible information, and also make me a bit more accessible to those that might not be able to afford to actually work with me, or you know, or have the opportunity to get into the clinic for whatever reason. So I think with social media, we definitely have to think about what our roles and responsibilities are in there. And, you know, like the work you do, you're trying to encourage people to get out there and participate and enjoy running. And that's really, really important. But, you know, there are lots of people out there who are telling you must do it this way and you must do it that way. And I think that's where it can become quite toxic and dangerous.
Hopefully I'm the opposite of that, because I'm like, I'm just going to eat this chocolate here. I'm probably bad influence in a whole nother way. I'm going to just have this beer and I'm going to have this chocolate. But I think I've got it written down here in my notes. Her Instagram is so informative, so positive, so myth-busting. You can see her passion. Literally written what you've just said there. You can really see your passion coming across. It's like it's relentless, isn't it? But you seem to just like bat it back every time. You're just like, yeah, and there, and there, and there. It's great. It's absolutely fantastic. If anyone wants to follow you on Instagram, what's your handle?
It's r_McGregor.
Okay.
So it's simple. But but you're right. It does feel like that. And there are days, I'm not going to lie to you, there are days when I'm just like, why am I doing this to myself? You know, literally, why am I doing this to myself? Because it can feel quite exhausting. But then I'll get a message, or somebody will say they'll send me a message saying, you don't know me, but your content's really helped me. It's really helped me to move forward. And you sort of go, okay, this is why I do it. Yes. So yeah, it is exhausting at times. And generally speaking, I think my job is fairly exhausting at times. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I had clinic last week and I came home and I cried for an hour because what I'm seeing in clinic is so sad.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes it, these individuals are becoming so affected by what is going on social media and society ideals and the sports culture that I literally don't know where to put some of that. You know, when people are offloading on you, you're like, I don't know how to make this better for people.
Yeah,
so, there is a real issue out there, and it's one that I think we can't turn a blind eye to anymore. So hopefully the book will help people to just really appreciate that there is no one size fits all, and you don't have to find validation for what you want to do. And also, you don't have to just focus on external cues. Let's listen to our internal cues that are so important. And they're there, like our bodies work. You know, we work on a series of feedback mechanisms, which is how our body stays in homeostasis. It has its own control mechanism. We don't need a watch to tell us what we need to do, you know. And I think I'm not saying I don't have a running watch. Of course I do, to kind of track my miles and whatever else, but it's not, I don't wear it all the time. You know, the data probably is not even that accurate for me because I don't wear it all the time.
But I hate things that tell me what to do. I like when my watch says beep beep unproductive training session, I'm like, oh shut up, what do you know, I'm doing an easy run today. And I don't like all this like business of like, oh, track your sleep, track your body battery. What the hell is a body battery? I felt hungry, so I ate like loads of food, and then I wasn't hungry anymore. And it's like, it's that simple. But it's not that simple all the time, and it hasn't been for me either. I'm not perfect. I only feel like that because I've had a baby now, so I'm like invincible and I don't care anymore. But I've got a question for you from Hannah, who's one of my patrons, so prioritizing patron questions. And she says, oh, I've been looking at this book. It's currently in my save for later Amazon basket. You should put it in your actual basket as soon as possible, Hannah. It's great. She says, I just wish I could stop myself from stress eating. Any advice there? So that would be an interesting one, because that's like the opposite of REDS. But then actually it could be fueling with the wrong types of fuel, couldn't it? So it could be not getting enough nutrients in that way.
Yeah, I think the stress eating is a really interesting one, and there's lots of things you can do, Hannah, in terms of firstly identifying the fact that you've identified that you know it's stress related is the first sign to acknowledge that, okay, I eat when I'm feeling stressed. Now, often why we do we have our behaviours is because all human behaviour has a purpose, and often that purpose is protection. So for you, if you're eating and you've acknowledged it's because you're stressed, the eating in a weird way is serving as a protection, because when we're eating, we're trying to potentially push our feelings down, but also maybe numb or just kind of focus on something different, or even maybe trying to get some comfort from it. Okay. So firstly, I'm not condoning it as a bad behavior. In fact, understanding why you do something is the first step to then being able to undo it. So if you understand that, it's like, ah, right, okay. So one of the things I always get my clients to think about is understanding their emotions and feelings. So instead of saying, I am stressed, start saying, I am noticing that I am stressed. Because the problem is, when you're stressed, you're going to respond to that. So as soon as you know that you're feeling stressed, you're uptight, at the moment, your automatic learned behavior is to eat. Because that's what you've learned to do, because temporarily it helps you to fix it. Temporarily. But if you start to, in conversations and, you know, even to yourself and even writing it down, saying, I'm noticing I'm stressed, suddenly the stress is something that is happening to you rather than you being it. And it opens up this space for you then to kind of explore it more and think about other strategies that could work for you. So I am noticing I am stressed. Okay, is it stressed? Are you overwhelmed? Are you anxious? Are you worried? What? Let's knuckle it right down and really work through what is going on for you. Where is this stress coming from? Is it because you've got too much to do, hence the overwhelm? Is it a conversation you've had with somebody that has left you feeling uncomfortable and worried, potentially? Like, understanding that is going to then help you to make the right decision about what you do next. So if it is actually you're overwhelmed, you've got too much work to do, which is often one of my things, is I just feel completely overwhelmed. The thing that I find really helpful is to bullet point everything down. What do I need to get done? And, you know, kind of look at it like in that context. And then I'll prioritize and say, okay, well, this needs to be done in the next 12 hours, but this could actually be done by the end of the week. Because sometimes when we're stressed, we can't emotionally regulate because our nervous system is on red alert. It's completely, it's always stimulated. So we find it very difficult to emotionally regulate. Hence we eat, or we go, you know, we have other dysfunctional behaviors. We might drink, We might not eat. We might overtrain. Like, all these behaviors are often serving as some sort of purpose. So understanding what is going on for you and then working out a way of dealing with it in a much more healthier way is the first step to kind of breaking it. The other thing that I would say is, what I see a lot is when people stress eat, they then beat themselves up about it a lot, because when you're stressed, you probably are looking for a bit of a dopamine hit to help regulate. So you will tend to go to those foods that will provide you with that dopamine hit. So it tends to be higher fat, higher sugar foods. So then what will happen is they'll feel the shame and they'll feel the remorse that they've done something bad. Again, because, you know, we have these good and bad foods. So first, let's not have good and bad foods, you know. But the worst thing you can then do, Hannah, is to go into restrictive patterns, which is what a lot of people do. If they've ended up stressing, they go, right, tomorrow I'll be good. That whole kind of good and bad. Tomorrow I'll be good. And they tend to then over restrict. They'll only eat like fruit and they'll just eat some salad leaves for lunch. And then they wonder why they feel stressed later on. So sometimes stress can actually be the fact that your nervous system is wanting nourishment because you've not fed it enough. And a lot of people don't appreciate that actually our nervous system will not be happy if we're under fueling or not giving it the right fuel, the right nutrients it needs. So you might then start noticing stress again and think, oh my God, what's going on, and go back to that same pattern. So trying to regulate your eating, making sure you're having, you know, good choices, make sure there's good choices available. Try and combine things like carbs and protein or carbs and fats. So things like oatcakes and peanut butter or Greek yogurt and fruit or a piece of toast with hummus or, you know, it's like, so anything like that to just try and have more regular eating and give yourself that ability to stop blood sugars from fluctuating. But also try and change the language you use with yourself, because that is a big part. If you're punishing yourself, then you're going to end up falling back into that same trap.
That's amazing advice. And Hannah is watching right now, and I've just popped up a couple of her comments, and she's like really identifying with this. She said training also helps her deal with the stress. So that's a good thing. And then she says, yes, she does feel awful when she pigs out. And then she starts going on MyFitnessPal. So you've covered it really well. I think the idea of getting some healthy snacks for when you do want to stress eat is a great idea. And then like looking into the why. And just having other things to do, maybe that aren't that. And divorcing yourself from the situation, you know, like the stress is happening to me. It sort of puts a bit of a barrier up, doesn't it, like a waterfall. Yeah,
and just like, you know, I mean, I find when I'm in that place, sometimes what I need is space and just a moment. So I'll take myself off, you know, I might sit outside for 10 minutes and listen to a podcast or listen to some music, or I might journal, or I might try and read, but I just completely diffuse the situation and give myself that moment to just feel a bit calmer before I then respond to it. And that's often the case in you know, anything in life, is that if we instantly react, then most likely we're not going to choose healthy or helpful behaviors. But if you give yourself a moment to observe and really consider what's going on and then decide how you're going to respond to that appropriately, then that often makes it much better to deal with. It's not easy. I say it and I don't always manage it. There are definite times when I react before I think. But as much as I can, I try and, you know, take a couple of deep breaths or do something just to change the tempo. Yeah. And there's a really good psychologist called Tara Brach, who I absolutely love, and I read everything she writes and listen to a lot of her podcasts. And one of her quotes is, when life speeds up, slow down.
Yeah.
I find that really helpful, that once I start to notice that I'm like, my brain is going into overthinking and I'm noticing the stress and the anxiety is creeping up, I have to press pause.
Yeah.
I literally will press pause. I almost like put my hands up and go, just need a minute.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll do that in meetings as well. You know, I'll often say, I just need a minute. I'm just going to take a minute and I'm going to come back to you with an answer. But I just need a minute. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, because it just gives you that time and space to be able to consider the right and response for that situation.
And it puts you back in control, doesn't it? Because that's the thing about stress, you feel out of control, don't you? And it's interesting, Chris Williams has put, to be honest, if I don't go for a good walk with my dogs, I feel a bit at odds with myself. So that ties in with like getting space for yourself. Yeah. I was just writing down Tara Brack as well, because I'll find her Instagram or whatever she's got, and I'll put it in the show notes or the film description below so people can have a look at that. But we must just move on to another question now. It's the last question that I've got before... I'll just briefly cover what else is in your book just before we get the last question in. The book covers intermittent fasting, which we did just touch on earlier, which is super, super hot right now. So really good reason to buy the book. It covers calorie counting as well, a good old fashioned method of dieting. So it's like, that's very interesting as well. I thought that was excellent. And then menstrual cycles and sport and menopause, which is fantastic. The female athletes aren't being left out. I can't believe that nothing was really said about like periods and mental and menstrual health until like now. I can't believe I never even like noticed what goes on in my body until I was trying to have children. And then older athletes, which you very nicely call masters athletes, which I thought was very lovely. And the individual athlete is also like covering different populations like disabilities, people of colour, generally left out and kind of sometimes marginalised populations that haven't had a lot of research done. So I thought that was brilliant. The other thing that I thought stood out in a bad way in this book was I noticed that a lot of doctors were ignoring what people were saying, like especially the women. So I just one take home from this book for me was I wanted all, like especially the women, but like everybody, just if you know there's something wrong with you, then don't give up, get a second opinion, go to a different doctor, go to a different health professional, go to someone like you, because at the end of the day, you know if there's something wrong with your body. Yes, so I thought that was interesting.
Thank you.
Yes, I devoured the book, as you can probably tell. So the last question is about vegan diets. So another one which is potentially causes the potential to cut out whole food groups. Well, obviously it cuts out whole food groups, but hopefully if you're doing it right, not the actual nutrition involved. I've definitely been guilty of this in the past, like trying to be more vegan and then instead of actually eating lots of really good for you vegan foods, I just literally cut out the meat and the dairy and just ate the bits that were left, which just really doesn't work. So it's interesting because this one came up on the Patreon Facebook group and we had one person ask about how to get vegan protein. And then another person came back with, please not vegan protein. It's so not an issue and it's not difficult. Maybe ask all the omnivores where they get their fibre from. Got to feed that microbiome after all. Looking forward to it. So I know it's not an issue for anybody who is vegan and has been vegan, is a very successful vegan for a long time. They know all about the protein sources that are vegan. But to people who are just kind of dipping their toe in the water, it is an issue for them. And also we suffer, I think, from a society that tells us we need like tons of protein, especially guys, and as you can see from like gorillas that are huge, silverback gorillas that just eat like plants and possibly worms, then you know you don't need tons and tons of protein to make you look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, maybe you do, but we don't want to look like him anyway. but basically what I'm trying to say is vegan diets, a lot of my readers want to, my audience want to be more vegan, be more plant-based, but it's hard to do it without getting, they're worried about the amount of protein that they get. Kat says that she's worried about it and she does a lot of running and she's aiming for 100 grams of protein a day due to the amount of running she does and weights that she does, and she was wanting recommendations for vegan recipes at 25 plus grams of protein per portion, and I don't like tofu. so just a few vegan protein sources, I suppose, because there's tons, aren't there?
Yeah, although tofu is one of the best ones,
oh,
to be
darn
fair.
It, Kat, so, you've got to come
and,
to terms
to
with
say,
protein,
like,
tofu.
If you are going plant-based, I would say that, you know, tofu, edamame, soya, these are the sorts of things you do need to kind of try and include as much of in your diet as you can, because they do have a lot more of the complete amino acids, particularly tofu. It's the only food source that does have the complete amino acids, like say chicken or, you know, or meat or fish. So, but all is not lost if you don't like tofu. You know, what we know is that as long as you're getting a good combination of grains and pulses throughout the day, you can meet your protein requirements, generally speaking. Again, where I think there can be difficulty in sort of plant-based diets is the overall fiber content can sometimes displace the amount of energy that you can consume, because fiber makes us feel full. So generally speaking, plant-based diet is we encourage it for lots of reasons. We encourage it because there are some aspects of it that make it a better choice for the environment, but equally there are aspects of it that do make it better for our overall health. However, you have to be careful if you're doing a high volume training, because again, if you don't quite get enough energy, then you're going to potentially fall into that sort of low energy availability and red. So you can get enough protein. I think my advice is trying to use things like soya milk and soya products rather than the kind of almond and the oat and the hazelnut options that are out there, because those have got no protein in them at all, whereas soya milk generally has a bit more protein in them. You do need to make sure you're having a good combination. So things like, you know, rice and dal or beans on toast, sort of those sort of combination. Quinoa is another good source of protein as well as being a grain. So like roasted vegetables with quinoa and some hummus, like you've got a really good combination there. So like, there's lots of options. There are lots of options using things like sunflower seeds and cashew nuts and peanut butter. These, you know, so you can make like a really nice stir fry with like a satay sauce. There's lots of things you can do to encourage good protein. But I think there are a couple of individuals that need to be a bit more mindful. So if you do have a very heavy training load, you may benefit possibly from supplementing with a vegan based protein. So that might be a pea protein or a soya protein, just to give you a little bit more, just to kind of help you with your recovery particularly. But also older athletes who are plant-based, so once we get sort of above 40, 45, we do have slightly higher protein requirements, particularly in the recovery phase. So this is where, again, potentially it might be more beneficial to use, to help, just a supplement with a plant-based protein to support that. So it's not a necessity for everybody, but I would say there are certain situations where you may well need to supplement a little bit. But fundamentally, yes, you can get enough protein from your diet as long as you are ensuring this combination of grains and pulses. If you're just getting grains, you're not going to get enough. If you're just having pulses, you're not going to get enough. So it is really important to get that combination across.
You make it sound really easy, actually. I've just got now a hankering for roast veg with quinoa and hummus. Or beans on toast.
Yeah. I have it quite often, actually. Yeah. I mean, I'm vegetarian, so I'm not plant-based. I do eat eggs, I do eat cheese, I do have dairy in my diet. But I do eat a lot of plant-based meals, a lot of vegan-based meals, just because, actually, again, being brought up on an Indian diet, it's very much plant-based, you know. So we didn't really have a lot of dairy in our diets, or we didn't really have a lot of eggs in our diets. I eat them now, but you know, we didn't. So, but we did have a lot of dal and chapatis and dal and rice and, you know, sort of chickpea curries and rice and stuff. So there are lots of really good ways of making sure that you do get what you need, but you probably do need to be a little bit more adventurous and make things a bit more exciting by using lots of herbs and spices. And but there's some brilliant, brilliant recipe books out there now for plant-based athletes, if people are interested. And there's some really good blogs as well, and sort of that people, you know, a lot of plant-based. So there's a couple of athletes. Well, there's an athlete that I work with called Lewis Roblin. Him and his partner are plant-based, and they're always putting really great recipes on Instagram. So they've got a really good, you know, between them they create some really nice options, and they do make it look really easy. But obviously the one thing again I'd say about becoming plant-based is be mindful not to fall into the trap of just kind of replacing, like, if you were always, you know, if you eat somebody who was eating lots of burgers before, don't just replace it with veggie burgers, because actually all you're then doing is still having quite a high processed diet, which is not going to necessarily be healthier or support you as well.
And it's more expensive as well. The other thing I think with me trying to like be vegan and just cutting everything out business is I think do it slowly. If you're not doing it for like the extreme like terrible animal welfare reasons, which should be like a high priority, but you know, if you're not doing it for that, then you can just do it little by little. And like I agree totally with being vegan. I think it's brilliant, and anyone who can do it, hats off to them. But I can't, and I just, you know, have the odd bit of fish like every now and then. So I have fish like maybe twice a week, and the other meals are veggie or vegan. So I think that you can fall into the trap of thinking you've got to be 100% vegan sometimes, and that's why I quite like the term plant-based, because it just, that's your basis. You could sort of be 80% vegan, but you get some people that are so militant about these things that it puts some people just right off. So yeah, I think little by little, and like, you know, you don't have to start out making your own hummus and everything like that. You can just try one thing one day and then the next week try another thing. So I think if you're worried about getting enough protein, just have a tin of tuna once in a while. Yeah. And actually, coming back to tofu, I didn't realize that tofu was so good, so I need to go and buy some now, because I've never really cooked with tofu, but I have done a recipe with tofu. I don't know if you know Anita Bean, who's done quite a lot of recipe books. So I went to her house and we cooked her favorite meal, which was it was a pad thai tofu with like cashew nuts and stir fried tofu in a soy sauce, which made it a lot crispier and a lot more tasty. So that could be one different way of approaching tofu.
Definitely. I tend to use a smoked tofu personally, which I find really good. So I use a smoked tofu, and also there's a company called Tofu. They do a teriyaki marinated tofu, which is really nice in a stir fry. Okay. So there's lots. I think the thing is, tofu, if you just buy plain bland tofu, it is boring and it doesn't taste of anything and the texture is a bit weird. But actually, there's lots of new alternatives now, because there's so much more focus on people becoming more plant-based, and you know, there's much more variety. So I think if you try it again and see what you think, and like you said, Claire, mixing it up with lots of flavors makes a really big difference. Marinating in the way you would marinate chicken could be a, you know, a really good way of just kind of introducing it and bringing it back in.
I'll link to the recipe as well in the film description below, and possibly up there if I can work out how to do it with an iCard. So that's great. What was I going to say? I was just going to say something very interesting and fascinating, but I've completely forgotten it now. Those were the three biggies, the reds, the LCHF and the vegan diets. And then we had that side question there from Hannah about the stress eating. But that was just brilliant, really. You're just always so good at sharing the information in a way that a layperson can understand, and just making it very simple again. I think food's got terribly complicated, and just to eat healthily, we all know what we should be doing, but I don't know if we do, but a lot of us know what we should be doing, but there's always chocolate and donuts, isn't there? So I think this book is great. And that's what I was going to say, your other book, training foods, if people want more of a recipe and snacks ideas, then that would be the book to go for. And I have linked to all of your books below, because there's training foods, isn't there, there's More Fuel You, and then there's also the Orthorexia book, which might be of interest to some people about the clean eating kind of gone too far kind of thing. And we've done a good job here tonight, really, because look, Hannah's put definitely getting the book now.
Brilliant. Perfect.
I think you'd really like training foods as well, Hannah. I think maybe people should start with training foods and then get this one. Which one would you recommend getting first? Which one is the more sort of like catch-all kind of?
I personally think More Fuel You is probably better to start with. Training food is much more technical.
Okay.
I think training food is really good for the recipe ideas. But I would say if you want to have a better relationship with food generally, and you want to know how to fuel your body for your sport, your adventures, then More Fuel You is definitely the better option.
Brilliant. That's an excellent sell there from the author herself. How about that? Well, thank you so much, Vini. It's been so great to chat to us. Just before you go, remind us how we can all follow you and how we can get in touch with you if people want to book you for any kind of speaking events or any kind of consultations with your team of nutrition dietitians.
So my Instagram is r_McGregor. And that's generally where I put most of my information in terms of kind of nutrition and what I'm doing. We have a website which is just reniemcgregor.com, and there's loads of information on there about what we do and what we offer. It is having a little bit of an upgrade over the summer, so bear with us, but you can still access us, and you can kind of contact us if you've got any questions, then you can do that. And yeah, that's pretty much me. I try to keep it as simple as possible.
So. It's definitely a good idea. Just Instagram, none of this Twitter and TikTok business.
Too much for me. So
yeah, it's too much for us old people. TikTok. That's for 15-year-olds. Maybe your daughter could do that.
I think she does, but I try not to look.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending so much time with us tonight. Sorry, it was a bit longer than I did say to you earlier today. But it's been fantastic chatting to you. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the summer.
Thank you. You too. And I'll catch up with you again soon. Take care.
Awesome. Thanks, Reedy. Bye.
You are getting sleepy. Your CPAP mask is clamped tightly to your face. You will not toss and turn through the whooshing. You will not throw the mask.
It's not working, Harold.
People who struggle with CPAP have partners who struggle too. Luckily, now there's Inspire. No mask, no hose, just sleep.
When I snap my fingers, you will remember to visit inspiresleep.com.
Inspire is not for everyone. Talk to your doctor to see if it's right for you and review important safety information at inspiresleep.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.